Chapter 2. As Muggles. A sleepless hour after Shizuru left the room, Draco gave up on trying to sleep. It felt like midnight, but the room faced east and the morning sun shone right in Draco's eyes. So he got up, the thin carpet rough under his sock-clad feet, and peered out the window. Blocky white buildings stretched as far as the eye could see. Draco jerked away. Is that a Muggle city? He peeked again. The view hadn't changed, though now Draco noticed black wires trailing randomly among the buildings. Brown poles? He'd seen those from the train sometimes, hadn't he? Shining lines of windows? A set of flimsy-looking white furniture on a thick-walled balcony across the way. And I thought our train stations were ugly, he thought, edging away again. Merlin, are Muggles blind? There were no curtains to block the offending view, though there was a set of blinds folded snugly near the top of the window. Draco tugged at them, but they wouldn't budge. What did the Muggles do? Glue them into place? He gave up with a huff and left the room. The door led to a short, white-walled hallway, with three more doors lining it, and a gap at the end leading to a larger room. Loud snoring came from the larger room, as did the scent of strange foods cooking. Breakfast or no Muggles? Breakfast or... Draco's stomach growled. Something clattered in the kitchen. Morning, Shizuru's voice called. Caught. Draco inched forward into a bland living room and replied, Morning. He trailed off in faint horror. A man slept sprawled on the couch, head thrown back and mouth open, snoring. His hair, a violent shade of purple, stuck straight up in a crest, the sides of his head shaved. He wore almost nothing, just pants and a fur-collared, sleeveless shirt, and... Draco sniffed discreetly. He reeked. Oh, it's you, Shizuru said, decidedly nonplussed. Draco pulled his eyes away from the freakish Muggle to see Shizuru standing at a counter in a tiny kitchenette, stirring something in a pan. Her gaze dropped to the man on the couch. I'll introduce you later, when he's sobered up. She pointed towards a gurgling blue device near her. Tea's in the pot, and breakfast. She poked at the stuff in the pan with an oversized pair of chopsticks. We'll be ready in a few minutes. She couldn't possibly expect Draco to eat with that noise and that stench and it would be like eating with Hagrid, a hungover Hagrid. Draco made a strangled sound in his throat. Come and wash up, Shizuru added, turning away, and you can set the table. He could... What? Draco squawked. Set the table, Shizuru repeated, as if it was normal. You can't possibly expect me to... That's something house elves do, Draco blurted. Shizuru paused, then set her chopsticks aside, turned a knob near the pan, and stalked out of the kitchenette. She strode right up to Draco, looming over him. You, she said flatly, have greatly inconvenienced all of us with your imbecilic stunt in Britain. I don't particularly care whose orders you were under or whether your life was at risk or not. Now we're stuck protecting you or blowing Kurama-san's secrets to the enemy. Normally, you would be treated as an honored guest, but we didn't invite you to be an idiot or to consider blackmail. We're doing Kurama-san a great favor keeping you here, and it's not a favor we can afford for a freeloader. You will contribute to your keep, or you won't get fed. Putting a few dishes on the table is not too much to ask, considering the price of groceries. Draco found his voice. But I think we'll go out today, so you can see just how difficult it is to put food in front of you. she added, eyeing him. Then perhaps you'll be grateful. All I'm asking you to do is carry 3 plates across 2 meters. Grateful? Draco exploded. For what? Slaving to some muggle? Merlin knows why Kurama dumped me in this pit, but it wasn't to do muggle work. The corner of Shizuru's eye twitched, as Draco thought of something else and added triumphantly, He promised to protect me. You can't do anything to me without going up against him. Take that, muggle bitch. She raised an eyebrow. So sure of that? Yes, I think. Nothing changed in Shizuru's gaze. Then go get changed for breakfast. We're going shopping afterwards anyway. She turned back to the kitchen without a backwards glance. Draco smirked. Draco 1, Muggle 0. Kurama set the last of his schoolbooks onto the shelf over his desk, finding the leather-bound tomes looked oddly right against the white-painted plywood and chrome. He shoved the emptied trunk against the foot of his bed and sat on the mattress, next to his seed kit. The kit had been barely adequate this year. For work, yes, it had been fine, but for teaching, he needed a lot more. But first things first, Kurama reached across to the phone on his nightstand and punched in a number. Hello, Shizuru-san?
I was wondering when I'd hear from you. How was your trip?
Fine, fine. Did you get your delivery all right?
Gods, yes. And he's every bit the arrogant little shit you said he was.
Eh? Was he that rude? I apologize, Shizuru-san.
He just needs to be set straight about a few details of reality.
Shizuru replied easily.
It's no problem doing so. I just have one question.
Yes?
How intact did you want him come September?
Shizuru-san, please tell me you're joking. Silence greeted this, and Kurama sighed. I want him nominally loyal and willing to keep quiet. I don't particularly care past that.
I'll use my discretion, then.
If you would, please.
Excellent.
There had been nothing but horrible muggle clothing in the dresser of Draco's room, which made sense since he was trapped in the muggle world. He couldn't be seen in his wizard robes. But about the only good thing that could be said of the garments was that they were clean. The denim trousers clung unpleasantly to his legs. The shirts were large enough for comfort, but the sleeves too short and the collar too large for propriety. At least he'd managed to find one that wasn't garishly emblazoned with stripes or strange logos. Breakfast had been worse, with no proper silverware or food and a third member of the household introduced. The kid, Rinku, hadn't bothered to hide his snickering as Draco had been forced to stab his food with one of the chopsticks provided and eat the rice with a strange sort of soup ladle. Stupid muggle brat. At least he'd been left with the drunkard while Shizuru dragged Draco shopping. Shopping, however, turned out to be worse than the clothes, the brat, and the breakfast combined. The streets were packed with muggles, many staring at Draco. It's the hair. Blonde, Shizuru had explained. All horribly, horribly muggle. Draco had no more fitting adjective in his vocabulary. Noisy, horseless carriages, barely recognizable as carriages, and spitting thin, white smoke from their back ends, zoomed past at terrifying speeds, almost as fast as brooms. Cacophony pretending to be music blared from small black boxes in people's hands, on porches, from stores. An impossible number of madmen talked into more black boxes, nodding their heads and gesturing as if speaking to actual people. And Shizuru, the evil, evil muggle, seemed to take an almost Slytherin glee in pointing out every single demon who came into view. There seemed to be another one every couple of blocks. Look, she murmured yet again, as they escaped the mob at the green grocer's, arms laden with bags of vegetables. The fat guy across the street, A mouth for every chin and taloned hands. Draco bit back a whimper, but couldn't help but look, peering as if he was looking for flaws in a gemstone. The extra mouths and claws were clearly visible, though somewhat ghostly looking, to such a view. Now she would tell him, "The second mouth has venomous fangs. The more mouths that develop after that, the larger prey that kind can eat. That fellow can manage 3 humans our size a day." The gory details. That type's surprisingly fast on its feet. The talons don't do much for actual slicing, but they puncture, dig in, and grip well. Sometimes the victim's lucky enough to get a main artery or their brain or heart pierced, and manage to die before they start getting eaten. Draco's stomach lurched. "I'm starting to wish I hadn't eaten breakfast." Shizuru led him around a corner, and they left the multi-mouthed demon behind. "Of course," she added, sounding something like a tour guide, "it's not all strangers. Before we reach the butcher shop, I'll warn you not to stare. In fact, don't do anything offensive at all. Imada-san is the best butcher in the area, and you are not going to risk me getting banned from her shop, even if she has 2 horns." "2 horns? Best butcher? What?" "And keep an eye out for her granddaughter. The baby's too young to know not to bite large chunks out of people's legs if she's hungry." Draco stopped in the middle of the street. "What sort of insane place is this?" he sputtered. Shizuru turned to face him, unmoved by his plight. "This is a place where 4 plates in the Earth's crust meet. This is a place where the barrier between our world and the demons is little more than a fisherman's net, artificial and prone to holes. And this is a place, Malfoy-san, where the wizards live as muggles among muggles because they are hiding from something much worse." "Live as muggles?" Draco repeated weakly. "It couldn't be. It just couldn't." Shizuru began walking again. "Most of the demons live here peacefully, hidden under glamours and working jobs. But there's a sizable percentage who eat humans exclusively, and even more who prefer the taste. And almost every demon you see has a criminal record, anywhere from petty theft to drunken disorderly to assault. Choose. Chew!" Draco thought. "That creepy guy snoring on the couch was a demon! Got a record of drunken brawling. Ah, we're here." And she pulled Draco through the open door into the mass of muggles in the butcher shop. If anything, the crowd here was worse than at the Green Grocer's. People squeezed past each other with downcast eyes and extensive repeats of, excuse me," nodding in lieu of bowing, snatching up packets of fish like they were the most wanted wizarding toy at Christmas. Shizuru ducked through the crowd, murmuring the same phrase, pulling Draco along in her wake. He cringed as he thumped into muggles regardless, shopping baskets jabbing into his stomach and thumping along his spine. They reached a large white bin filled with more packets, and Shizuru reached into it. "Malfoy-san, do you like mackerel?" Draco dodged an incoming basket, nearly knocking over a little girl. "No." "Tough, it's on sale." And she grabbed 2 of the last 3 packets, nimbly dodging another woman's hand, and broke free of the crowd, only to dive into another one leading to the registers. Draco guessed that there were about 50 people waiting, and the queue was crawling forward at a snail's pace. He decided to simply concentrate on not getting too bruised and ignore how long this was taking. "Ah, good morning, Imada-san," Shizuru said as they reached the register. Draco couldn't help it. He stared. Shizuru had mentioned the 2 horns. She hadn't mentioned that they arced out from where the woman's, demon's, ears should have been, nor had she mentioned the heavy jowls or the saber-tooth fangs, the gray hair streaked with white, the age-spotted, taloned hands tapping at the register keys. Shizuru kicked Draco's ankle. "Manners!" she hissed at him. The demoness's eyes were fixed on him, behind thick bifocal lenses. Good morning, Imada," The eyes hardened, and Draco quickly remembered. San? The demoness relaxed slightly, and she finished the transaction, pouring Shizuru's change into a tray and bagging the meat. The walk home was a repeat of the trip out. Draco learned much more than he had ever cared to know about demons and Japanese muggle culture. By the time they reached the front door of Shizuru's apartment, she was smiling grimly. Now then, Draco-san, Kurama's protection doesn't extend to protecting you from running out and getting yourself eaten. It also has no bearing on whether or not I let you remain in the house while I call Kurama-san to come fetch you, if it becomes necessary to kick you out. She paused to get her keys out, jamming one into the door. Lot of demons would love to munch on a magical little morsel without repercussions from the locals, and a foreigner suits the bill nicely. She pushed the door open with her hip, gesturing him inside. You're safe here, or with one of us, but I wouldn't risk going out alone if I were you. Kicking off her shoes, she stepped up onto the wooden floor of the living room, leaving Draco in the sunken entryway, gaping after her. Oh, Merlin, Draco thought. This isn't a safe house. It's a prison.
Oni-san, you're probably very surprised to get a letter so soon, but big things are happening. I don't know if you've seen the paper or not, but Draco-san has gone missing. Almost everyone in the Three Broomsticks was talking about it. They say the last time children disappeared from the platform, it was you-know-who. It's very odd, because he kidnapped Muggle-born children, and Draco-san's pureblood. But Oni-san, they're so frightened. Genkai Shihan says the Aurors will be talking to everyone who was there. That automatically excludes us, and you, but they'll probably come looking for all of us once they finish with the witnesses. Don't make things difficult for them, please.
Kazuma says hello. He found a strong line of magic west of London and is following it. We'll keep you updated if he finds anything. Love, Yukina.
Hiei read the last paragraph with a disbelieving snort. Kuwabara had probably said something more along the lines of, "Tell that shrimp not to go falling off a mountain up there." As for the letter itself, Yukina knew perfectly well that Draco had discovered Kurama's demonic nature over a week ago. She'd seen Draco in the same room as Yoko Kurama. She was perfectly astute enough to connect that event with Draco's disappearance, and to mark Kurama as the culprit. And if Kurama had done something this major, she had to know that Hiei would have been aware of it, and perhaps even in on the plot. So, reading between the lines.
Hiei, I have to warn you. Draco's disappearance is getting blown out of proportion. Prepare your story and don't run or hide, because if they suspect anything, there's sure to be trouble.
Hiei allowed himself a half smile, refolding the letter and tucking it safely into an inner pocket. Thank you, Yukina.